I can say something about the technique that you mentioned, because I guide breath journeys, and my experience is when you connect through the mouth and you mouth breathe, you easily access the suppressed emotion that are just at the top layer. So let's say you are starting to breathe through the mouth, and then you get to realize, oh my God, I'm really angry at my partner or at my ex-partner. And then you start crying, you start releasing anger. But instead of releasing that anger when it comes, if you switch to nose breathing, then you get to really actually access to the deeper layer. And what I've noticed is when I feel that people are ready to release, if I can get them to really stay connected to the breath, not go for the easy access release, but go deeper, then they will access, of course, the source of all evil, our mothers, our fathers, you know? And that's usually my experience. So basically there is a space for mouth breathing to really get to charge the body, to build up the intensity. And there is a space to also navigate, pendulate, and then go into the deeper layers. And I find that in that case, nose breathing gets you there.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm a breathing coach, and I'm also the host of this podcast, where we get to interview people from all over the world that are in the field of breathing and wellness and spirituality and everything that sits in between, so we can kind of pick their brains and all learn to be better in some way, whether that's breathing better or sleeping better or reducing stress. And today I've got Mr. Alexander Tusuk on the podcast. He has a company called Breathing Cold in Bali. I was in Bali, I never got to meet him, unfortunately, but we did connect afterwards. And a very interesting guy, came from France. I think in his own words, he was quite stressed and quite angry, didn't have all the best relationships, thought this breath works a load of old BS, did a breathing class, and he's like, what the hell just happened to me? And from there, he just got obsessed, and now he teaches people to become breathwork instructors using the breath and the cold in Bali. So if you're looking for a way of combining a holiday with learning a new skill and creating a new business, then this is your guy. And I just love talking to him. So he has worked with prisoners, which I find very interesting. We spoke about that. He uses the breath in a very specific way. He's very body led, which I really like as well. And he helps people just get into themselves, calm down, and use the breath in a very particular way I haven't heard somebody talk about before. So it's a very interesting chat I have with Alex. And he's just a really nice guy. You know, he's a guy that's been on that journey, as we all have, right? And he's used the breath to help bring himself to being the best version of himself. And he's put himself in a wonderful part of the world as well. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. If you get a couple of seconds, do me a quick favor. Could you hit that follow button? Could you hit that subscribe button? Could you give us an extra one subscriber on the show? And that way we grow and we get to bring more interesting guests in for you as well. Here is Alex, Breathing Cold in Bali. His links are down below. Enjoy this conversation. Here we go. Alex, welcome to the Take a Deep Breath podcast. Breathing Cold Bali, how are you today?
I'm pumped. I feel really amazing. It's a long time coming. I'm a big fan of yours and a dedicated breath fan. So very happy to flow with you, my friend, today. Very honored.
Well, I'm very happy to have you on here. And hopefully this is the first of many. And I hope that we get to see each other in person at some point as well. I love Bali. I spent only 1 month there, but it's one of my favorite places on the planet.
It's a very powerful place. There's a strong feminine energy here. It's a very healing place. A lot of people come with that intention, which creates really a field of healing and nurturing. And yeah, it's a beautiful land, beautiful place.
Yeah, we can talk a bit about that later, actually, because yeah, we've got a couple of friends there. Okay, I really want to kick off with a bang here. So talk to me about, you talk about the benefits of mouth breathing, which is very controversial today in the breath world. So what's going on there?
Yes, you're right. You know, there's so much out there on the benefits of nose breathing from a performance perspective, from an emotional control perspective. You know, when you want to control emotion, you just seal your lips and just connect to nose breathing. But how do you express emotions? How do you laugh? You cannot laugh with the mouth closed. You cannot have an orgasm with your mouth closed. You cannot cry with your mouth closed. And very often in a breath session, all I need to do when someone is holding on their tears is just press on their bottom jaw and let their mouth open and they get flooded with emotions. So much in what I see out there is about controlling, suppressing, and I think we need to reestablish the benefits of conscious mouth breathing. So for me, conscious mouth breathing means whenever you are connected to your emotions, let's say you're dancing, and I would highly recommend to everyone to have some kind of a dance practice because it's a feminine, creative, you don't know where you're going. And so much in our world is about objective and goals and targets and routine and doing the right thing, da-da-da-da-da, that I feel one of the main diseases in our world is control, over-control. Women are getting into their masculine side and they want to control themselves and control everyone. And we are here fearful of each other. And I really believe that mouth breathing invites something that I call getting out of your own way. Just get out of your own way. Just shut down the mind, shut down the control. Just allow yourself to be. As you know, breathing cold, I also facilitate ice baths. This is how I recommend to enter an ice bath. If you look online on ice bath videos, it's all about control. It's about the guys getting the ice and right away taking control of what's going on. I say stop that. There is plenty of space for you to be in control. When you get into the ice bath, allow yourself for one breath to be overwhelmed. Allow yourself to let those emotions come. And people are usually shocked when I demonstrate an ice bath because they have their idea of what is an expert in ice bath, someone who really can control himself. And so I get into an ice bath and I scream and I cry or I laugh. I don't know what's going to happen, but I allow those emotions to come out. And very often they misinterpret it as this, oh, well, you're such a breath expert. You're such a nice expert. Look at you. They almost think that I'm a fraud because I'm not in control. And I think there is a space now where we need to welcome people just being themselves and letting go of the mask, letting go of the constant control. Being in Bali, I work a lot with yogis and meditation gurus and experts. And I can tell you, man, I told you I had the luck to having more than 6,000 people. How many emotionally suppressed beings come to my workshops? It's crazy. And almost the more spiritual, the more mindful they are, the less connected they are to their emotional bodies. So that's my short answer on mouth breathing has its space. It's a big one.
It's so good to hear. I recently learned a new breath modality called Vivation. Have you ever heard of this one?
Vivation? I don't think so, no.
No, second oldest Western breath modality, apparently. And they all went over to India in the 70s and 80s, Binny Dansby and Leonard Orr and all these people. And this guy came back, Jim Leonard, and his whole breath thing is you breathe conscious, connected breathing, but you feel the body. And they talk a lot about suppression and activation and feelings and how we're so disassociated. So you mentioned suppression. So can you just give us a bit more about what is suppression? Why are we doing it? What's going on there?
Yes, I will answer that in detail. But what I can say something about the technique that you mentioned, because I guide breath journeys. So basically getting people for an hour and a half to breathe in a certain pattern, in a certain way. And my experience is when you connect through the mouth and you mouth breathe, you easily access the suppressed emotion that are just at the top layer. So let's say you are starting to breathe through the mouth and then you get to realize, oh my God, I'm really angry at my partner or at my ex-partner. And then you start crying, you start releasing anger. But instead of releasing that anger when it comes, if you switch to nose breathing then, you get to really actually access to the deeper layer. And what I've noticed is when I feel that people are ready to release, if I can get them to really stay connected to the breath, not go for the easy access release, but go deeper, then they will access, of course, the source of all evil, our mothers, our fathers, And that's usually my experience. So basically there is a space for mouth breathing to really get to charge the body, to build up the intensity. And there is a space to also navigate, pendulate, and then go into the deeper layers. And I find that in that case, nose breathing gets you there. So what I love about breath work is that, you know, you're like me, you're a complete geek and fan about it. And we never stop learning. And that's never ending. And I really believe that once you fall in love with the breath, you really fall in love with every aspect of life. And that's, for me, the essence of it. And that's why what we do is so extraordinary, because it really gets us to access the essence of what it means to be human. And it's amazing for whatever you want to take it, spiritual way, health way, happiness, pleasure, joy, pain, sorrow, anger, name whatever you want to experience as a human, it all comes down to some kind of relation with the breath. So spending time developing some intimacy with our own breath means we get to access what it means to be human. And that, I feel, is the reason why everyone should be, you know, subscribing to your channel and loving their connection with the breath. I think it's important to, at one point, not be too attached to techniques. I find that right now the narrative is really about breathing right and this technique over that technique, and everyone's kind of looking for the right way to breathe and who has the best technique. But I feel there is a space for us to reconnect to our own inner guidance and play with it. Yeah, you are different every day. So it means the way you breathe and the technique you can use is also different every day. Sometimes you need to have some, to calm yourself down. Sometimes you need to access, to be balanced. Sometimes you want to access something that has been suppressed. We're going to talk to you about that. You ask the question about what it means. But yeah, it's a Swiss knife of life. Yeah. So suppressed emotions. When you are a child and you're in theta, brainwaves, most of the first 7 years of your life, you basically really receive everything that you experience as love. And you don't have the ability to necessarily comprehend what's going on. And if you're going through some tough situations, and for instance, it doesn't mean it's something that happened to you. It can be something that didn't happen to you. Maybe your parents let you cry too much. Maybe you didn't get the love the way you were expecting it because your parents didn't do the work, so they expressed love the way they had experienced it, and it could be in a dysfunctional way. What you need to do in that case, because your parents cannot be wrong, is to adapt yourself. So all of a sudden, you are adapting yourself in order to survive and to stay in connection with the people that are around you. And if they are abusing you, well, you need to make yourself wrong. And it leads to dysfunctional behaviors. So because we know that and we have awareness of it, we want to kind of hide them. We don't want to really allow those parts of us. Like, you know, I want you to have certain image of me, you know, because I want you to buy my book. I want you to buy my course. I want us to go out and happy friends or have a relationship, you know, like, if, oh my God, if you knew really what was going on inside of me, there is no way you would connect with me. That's a narrative we tell ourselves anyway. So we kind of select and we put out some kind of a theater out there, and it's kind of a show that we put out there. Basically, the role of the work that we're doing with breath work, with therapy, with integration, is to basically integrate the different parts of ourselves and welcome them and feel, yeah, I can have compassion for myself. And when we start appreciating all our parts, and all of a sudden we give them space and they can express themselves, they don't need to, nothing needs to be suppressed anymore. It just needs to be integrated. And that's the work we do with breath work, with authentic relating, you know, all those modalities of mindfulness are all about integrating all the parts of you. And I believe that's the path of happiness, is the path of self-inquiry and awareness, and not selecting and choosing, because unfortunately it doesn't work. So yeah, that's my explanation.
That's really interesting. So when somebody is having a session and they have a release and they have an emotional expression, is that in itself healing, or is there something else that needs to happen? And the reason I ask that is when I did rebirthing, I did some rebirthing a couple of years ago in hot water, I had a huge 2-hour crying session, but nothing really shifted afterwards. So I'd be curious to get your thoughts on the expression and then what needs to happen after that. Hey, I just want to pause the podcast 2 seconds to say Do you like breath work, but think that you could be practicing it more, you're not sure which techniques? I'm going to cut to the chase here. We've got the doors open to our Take a Deeper Breath community. We've got over 100 members. This isn't a sad Facebook group. It's on a platform called School, and we breathe live almost every single day. So if you're looking for accountability, focus, a really loving community of great humans where we get to kind of ask each other questions, things we're not sure about. I'm bringing in my friends who are wonderful experts from around the world to come and teach us things. And it's a very small monthly payment. The link is down below. Come on over, say hello. Here's the best part. 7 days, you're not happy. We do a 7-day money back guarantee. And I'd love to see you inside the Take a Deep Breath community. Cheers.
So all I'm sharing is pretty much out there. And it's pretty much backed by tons of studies now. So, you know, happily share some, you know, after that, some biographical or people can look it up. But something we need to appreciate is that unless your parents are amazing hippies who've done all their work on their ancestors and past lives, they probably raised you with some kind of unresolved baggage that they've passed on to you. So what it means is when you are releasing, you don't have to release something that belongs to you. It doesn't mean it's something that happened to you. It could be something that happened to some of your ancestors, some people say up to 7 generations, that have been passed on without being resolved. If you believe in it, it could be also some past lives that have been, you know, again, unresolved. And, you know, here I hope not people start quitting the show because it becomes too woo-woo or ubudian, as we say. But what it means is you are an emotional being, and what has not been resolved get imprinted in the body. And I believe, that's my belief, that disease are emotions that are not being expressed. And what is the opposite of disease is ease, is bringing ease in the body. So what we are doing in those sessions is some kind of release of tensions, muscular tensions, and release of trapped emotions that have been buried because there was no space for them to be expressed at the time of the trauma. Again, traumas that are yours or your ancestors or past lives. But they are there. It doesn't mean you need to understand them because, you know, for instance, your grandparents, you have no idea what they went through. But it needs to be released so that it doesn't get stuck in the body and gets expressed in, you know, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune disease, and other forms. So that's the essence of the release work. Now, of course, what needs to happen after you said you had a major release is to make sure that you are integrated. Make sure that you feel grounded. And that's, I would say, in my work, is the most important. I consider breath work prep work. I consider ice baths prep work. For me, it's not the hero. And very often in breath work, you will hear that it's all about the breath technique. It's not the case in my approach. For me, they are tools that get us to access things that have been suppressed, that have been repressed. And then, and that's another aspect of my work, I only work in community. I do believe that our indigenous populations, they always knew how to do it. If someone has a problem, it's a community problem. It's very much a Western culture problem to see, if you have a problem, don't tell anyone about it. No one needs to know. This is your shit. Talk to your doctor, and then the doctor, it's confidential between the doctor and the patient, and maybe eventually you tell your therapist if you're are smart enough to have a therapist, or you bother your wife with it. But in general, you try to sort out your own stuff. Well, guess what? That's not how indigenous populations deal with their traumas or their problems all over the world, no matter where they are. So I really go back to the root of how we heal, and it's in community, you know? So a lot of times I experience that people just enjoy breathwork and ice bath when nothing happens. They don't feel anything happen. And then someone starts sharing something and they start crying and they don't even know why they're crying. So they are being triggered by something that is being shared. So for me, breathwork and ice baths, they just prep them. They just open their heart. They just get them ready to really open up. They don't even know that they're ready to open up, but something comes in the field and boom. And it's incredible what happens in those circles where all of a sudden it's fireworks, you know, of course. We have cultural trauma, generational traumas. COVID is a trauma that we have all experienced. So it's very interesting. We can work with that. You know, most women have experienced some form of sexual abuse or misuse. So, you know, when these topics come in the field, we can have a discussion. But the healing part there is incredible. Like, I have men that feel safe enough to share that they like to watch children pornography, or that they are attracted sexually by small children. And there are mothers in the room and fathers in the room. Where is the space in our society for such a conversation? No, if you are attracted by small children, go to the mental hospital, or we don't want to have anything to do with you. We just put you up. The only problem with the prison system is only one. It doesn't work. It's just, again, we are suppressing problems as a global level. So we don't want to hear about these kind of people. Well, guess what? We all have a part of ourself, which is a part of a shadow self, which we don't really want to admit. And then we do things behind closed doors, or we really don't tell anyone, and we just live with this instinct. But when we have a space where we can just share openly, without judgment, really safe, that you, all of you and all the parts of you are welcome, it's a space for healing. And I work with prisoners. I don't know if you follow that, but I do work in prisons. I facilitate breath work in prisons. And it's amazing what happens in those environments where people have never experienced being safe. Just that. When is the last time you felt fully safe? Space means I can share absolutely everything about myself without holding back, without selecting the narrative. It's not rocket science. It's not about me. And that's why I teach people how to facilitate those sessions, because it's very much a formula. It's something that I can be explained, that can be taught, and that can anyone can do. And I really highlight the fact that I don't hold my breath for a long time. I cannot stay in an ice bath for a long time. All these things are really, for me, the old narrative about the teacher need to be superior to the student, and he needs to have done the work and all, and be to a place of mastery of some kind before he can teach. I very much disagree with that. I think if we allow ourselves to just be human and vulnerable and authentic, and we share from that place, we don't try to manipulate and cheat, but we just show up being us, this is the most powerful thing a facilitator can do. Because when I share from that space, I'm telling with a mirroring brain in the prefrontal cortex, you can do the same. And that's all the people need. It says, oh my God, Alex shared something that is shameful. And I usually ask them after I share something, you know, very edgy, it says, raise your hand if you think less of me as a facilitator. No one raised their hand. Because the truth is, we're all focused on ourselves. And when we have an opportunity through these modalities and vulnerability to be able to access ourselves, because that's really what it's about. When I share the things, you are reflecting, so, oh, right, really, there is something there that it gets triggered in me that actually would be nice if I could just talk about it. And that I believe, is the space of healing. So for me, really, after the breath, after the ice, that's where the work begins.
That's so important. You reminded me of, I think, holotropic breathing does something similar. They breathe for 3 hours, and then it's the space after. And I spoke to a holotropic person a few years ago, and she says, you just sit there sometimes for hours. You don't say anything and allow the space. It's really interesting, because I feel like there's a lot of breath work nowadays where it's like quick, breathe, 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 right, next, finished. And we miss that special part. Yeah, prep. Breath work is prep. I love that.
I can spend sometimes as much time just in silence as we would do in breath. So just nothing's happening. There is no more music. There is nothing. And it can be an hour of silence. And I always say to the facilitators that I train, this space cannot be too long. It doesn't happen. You can take 15 minutes. Can take an hour. This is because what we do with breath work, all those modalities are the same. They all do the same, whether it's CO2 tolerance or holotropic or rebirth, we create space. And all we need is space. Some people access it through meditation, others through breath work. So, you know, all those modalities where we love to go to sauna or not. We want space. And we're so busy and we're so much in our head, which is, you know, a symptom. People who are in their head, it's a symptom because it's a place of safety. The emotions, we want to avoid emotions. That's why we are in hide so much. And if we are connected to our emotions, that's the answer to shut down the monkey brain. People who are connected to their emotional body, they don't need to be in their head so much. So it's not about the technique. It's about allowing yourself to feel the feelings.
I'm just reading a book at the minute called, there's one called Letting Go, and there's another one. The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Have you come across this?
Yeah, those books, yes.
Yeah. So, and Eckhart Tolle talks about something similar, but I'd love to get your thoughts on this idea of the observer or the witness, that part of us that kind of sits back and we are not our thoughts. And, you know, what's your thought on all of this? Because I always find this very interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, in my word, I would call it the self. And then we have different... the self is pure, compassionate, loving, caring, unconditional loving. And then whenever we're in an environment where we don't feel safe anymore, then different parts of us can come in and they take over. So that's why I'm going to be lying. I'm going to be manipulating. I'm going to be controlling. I'm going to be... And that's where the breath comes in. That's where the conscious breath comes in. You know, let's say I work with addicts. I tell to an addict, when you feel the urge for whatever it is, you know, and for me, an addict is someone who writes a book or it's not someone who takes alcohol or drugs. It's someone who is, you know, watching Netflix in a compulsive way, who's eating French pastries in a compulsive way. And we are all addicts, yeah, with that definition. So whenever you feel the impulse, can you stay with the impulse for one breath? So don't quit smoking, but just interject one breath between the urge and the act. Can you feel what was the trigger? What happened? You felt unsafe. What was there that felt unsafe? What was the word? What was the trigger? And the more you're able to interject breath, and if you can up to, you know, 1 minute of breathing, 5 minutes of breathing, you are able to kind of figure out what is really going on there. And now all of a sudden, you don't feel the need to suppress it with some kind of use of some kind. So that's how you deal with addiction for me. It's in a loving kindness way of observing the triggers and have compassion for yourselves that needed, you know, Gabor Mate says it very well. It's not what's wrong with the addiction, but what's right with the addiction. How is it serving you in that moment? And if you are of that mindset, says, oh, this is why I do this, and you can observe with compassion rather than, you know, judging yourself, I really should quit smoking, this is bad for me. No, the problem with all that, it just doesn't work. So for me, it's really about doing things at work rather than comparing techniques. And I really feel that we need to integrate our parts. And the model that I'm referring to is Internal Family System, IFS. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a beautiful framework and with practice, you can just self-regulate and understand yourself. So if you are stressed, it's a symptom. So I can teach you breathing techniques to deal with stress, but it's like you tell me I have a headache and I give you paracetamol, Panadol, and then the headache is gone and you're happy. So I can give you, and you know all the breathing techniques to get out of stress, but you're just treating the symptom. Instead of that, if you can sit with the stress, if you can sit with the trigger and say, oh my God, there is something there for me to learn. What is there? And you start having this inquiry, then you can go to the root cause of the stress. Yeah. And you don't need to just deal with it at the symptom level.
Oh, that's very interesting. You mentioned the shadow self. I don't really know much about that. Could you just explain that for the viewers? What when people say shadow self, what's the theory behind that?
Shadow is all the part that, you know, we don't want to bring to the surface, the things that we just want to keep a little bit hidden, you know, the behaviors that we're a bit ashamed of. You know, maybe you're stingy, maybe you are greedy, maybe you are horny and you look at girls and you're really... You're with your wife and your baby, but really you have dirty thoughts about, you know, all those things that are there, but you just, let's not go there. Let's not express them. That's, you know, that's it. So it's really having an approach where you welcome everything. When you're not selective on what's coming, you just say, oh, interesting. That's there. And try to have compassion for it. You know, you're going through a hard time in your relationship and you're thinking of going in another relationship. So, you know, why are you using sex or woman to feel better, you know, and what's your relation there? So it's the ability to go and dive into these things. Or maybe, you know, going the shadow work would be around people who have abused you, you know, and you just don't want to think about them, you know. You just think, okay, you know, it happened. I don't want to go there. The problem is it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You know, it's like really, it's the image of the ball that you put in the swimming pool. How long can you keep the ball underwater? It doesn't work. At one point, it needs to explode. And that's called murder. That's called rape. That's called, you know, behavior, rage, road rage, and abuse of all kinds. And we've seen that all the time. They're just people, they wait, and, you know, they explode. So if we stop doing that and we really allow ourselves to be just human, and there's not really a narrative around that in our society, and there is not really a narrative around that on podcasts, and it's really about how to be good, you know, and how to be better and how to improve, and not so much about accepting and surrendering and being, not trying to change. It's all about, personal development. I'm very much against the idea of bettering yourself. There's nothing to improve. You know as well as me that if you're looking for the best breath master of all time, you just need to take a newborn baby. There is not a single breath worker, no matter how famous or rich they are, that can match the quality of a breath of a baby. Yeah, so for me, it's really a process of accepting and unlearning rather than adding more stuff to it, you know. It's a path of liberation.
Yeah, you're right. We don't talk about that enough in society. It's not talked about on podcasts enough. There's a few people I've heard talk about the shadow self, but it needs more discussion. Can you talk a bit about the prisons? How did you get involved there? What work are you doing with the prisons? Because that's fascinating.
You know, one of the reasons I moved to Bali, I was in sustainability before, and I thought, you know, if I can do something in Bali, being such an iconic destination, I think it could have ripple effect everywhere in the world, because just you say Bali and people are paying attention just because it's such an iconic brand. So that's why I moved here, originally around interest in sustainability, which I believe I'm serving, but in a really more authentic way. I feel that once people connect to their self, then they are better caretakers of Mother Earth. Then they are, you know, they are better husbands and better partners and better friends. So I really believe that what we do with these modalities are really helping the planet and the collective. So I really want to bring this to the people who need it the most. And I find that schools, of course, and children, and prisons are two avenues where really we need to bring these modalities, because, you know, the sooner we can bring this to, you know, kids, then we can raise conscious adults. And then prisoners, I feel we can bring them the path of liberation and freedom that they really seek and that they really want. And they feel it's a very physical one. They want to get out of prison, but they are still, and you hear it all the time, of people going to prison, come out, they don't know how to function in society, and they feel good again when they're back in prison. So there is something about integrating people and appreciating yourself. So my work in prison is very much same as I do outside, but man, in my work, I touch a lot. I do therapeutic touch, and I do a motherly, loving touch. And there is, you know, when I go at the end of a breath session to inmates that have been in prison for 15 years for murder, and I just lovingly caress their hair or their face or their jaw, or I hug them, this is often the moment they completely let go and they cannot control themselves. So I can press different trigger points where traumas are held, you know, in the jaw because they couldn't express themselves, in their hips, in their heart. I can release the diaphragm, which a lot of trauma is held in the diaphragm, you know, because when you have a trauma, you hold your breath. Maybe you're familiar with you know, the location of traumas in the body. We can talk about that if you want, and how bringing the breath back in the body is a way to really liberate those traumas physically. But I find that often at the end of a session, when I just lovingly caress people, they release so much because no one ever done that to them. They never got it from their mother. They never got it from their father. They never, of course, never got it in any relationship, because that's not what they experienced as love in their early childhood. So bringing that to those people and then having a space when they are one-on-one sharing with inmates, crying, being vulnerable, being authentic in that environment where it's no, I mean, this environment is really hard. You have to imagine that, you know, you can check on my Instagram some photos. There is no light. You have people that are in cells. There are 16 people per cells. One toilet. They are sleeping on concrete. They are doing breath work. There are people that are shouting. There is a microphone. There are people that are throwing cigarette butts at us while we're breathing and facilitating. To imagine that people are laughing, etc., etc. And for them to, in the middle of that, release, cry, shake, have complete somatic release in their bodies, and then being able to really talk about it and say, and we have testimonials of people sharing, you know what, I've had memories that of my children I haven't seen in 15 years, and I've decided to not go there, but I could be, I was overwhelmed with feeling their love and that connection. It's amazing. So I really, you know, I want to do my training, my facilitator training for free, to people who are bringing these modalities in Bali. I start with Balinese and Indonesians so that they can learn this and they can be empowered with it, because, you know, it's a country that was colonized not long ago. So here is another white guy, a middle-aged white guy who's telling people what to do. And it's a very difficult thing to do. So I really want to just train locals, and then they can help each other. I think it will really help people feel safer as well. And then hopefully have a success story that can inspire other countries. And it had happened in a few countries already. Like a few of my students have been inspired by it, and then they approached their local prisons and have been doing, not in big countries because the laws are so complicated and the rules are really, that's why I do it here, because it's a bit easier to do it. You know, you just talk to the ward of the prison and you do it. In many countries, it would probably require a change the law before you do something like that. But I must say, you know, I've experienced two moments in my life that have been really transforming. One is my first breathing session. Like a lot of people, you know, like it's very, when you connect to something beyond or whatever you want to call it. And the second time when I was holding that space, it was just, you know, 33 people. I can't make that number up. 33 people that were there doing breathing, you know. And I'll send you a photo if you want. And because there's something about breath, and people need to really, they know it, but we are affected by energies, and we are energies. And when you connect physically with someone, even if you are touching, there is an exchange there. And I really believe that I received as much as I've given in ways that I didn't expect, but it really changed me. It aged me. It made me way more serious. It made me like feel a sense of really responsibility with it. Because, you know, before that, I'm mainly working with people who are spiritual, who are on their healing journey, and, you know, people who come to Bali for the thing. But working with inmates who had never done anything remotely close to that, and getting them to open up this way and share things that are really mind-boggling was very impacting. And I'm very humbled and honored, but also I'm very sensitive to it. It's not easy. It's impactful.
It sounds like there's a lot of responsibility there, but it also sounds really beautiful. Have you done any work with the staff? Have they been interested? Have you taught them anything?
Yes, the prison staff, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So one of my graduates, who's like Mr. Buteyko in Indonesia, is quite a character here. And he's done my training, and he's the one who kind of opened the door for me to do this. He did 3 sessions before we could access the inmates. I didn't do them. He did them. So he did TRE and he did Buteyko exercises with the doctors, and then the wards. So I personally haven't done it, but he has, yes.
Oh, wow.
But
the doctor
was there when I was doing the session, and she was, wow. She
really?
Basically, the release part, you know, they're not used to seeing people vulnerable, sure, in front of others, you know. There's such narrative around being strong in our culture in general, but imagine in prison, it's the extreme place where you don't want to be vulnerable because of the narrative that we have around that, and for people to realize, wow, actually vulnerability is a sign of strength. It's a powerful and yeah, it's life transforming.
It's so good. It's really nourishing to hear that story, because you just instinctively feel like they need that. They really need that there. So it's beautiful. You mentioned Tiori. I'd love to get your thoughts on something that's happening with me. So I've got a crazy diaphragm, yeah? I had Baselli on the podcast, Dr. Baselli, who created Tiori, and he took me through a couple of sessions. Beautiful. And then when I was in the US doing this Vivation training, man, my diaphragm went freaking mental. It was just like contracting, and maybe I need a TRE session. But what happened is really interesting. Because I was fighting the diaphragm the whole time, and in the end, I just let the diaphragm breathe for me. It wanted to breathe in a certain way, so it would contract, and I would and then it went really quiet. So it was like it was trying to give me a message to, no, you need to breathe this way right now. And then after I did it, it was like, okay, I'm finished now. But now, 3 months later, it's coming back again a little bit. So any experience in this area?
So the diaphragm, which is the main respiratory muscle under your rib cage, is your first trauma responder. You know, so there are two main muscles I find in my work. The first is the diaphragm. The second is the psoas muscle. So what happens when you experience something traumatic is associated with a breath hold. And it's usually a forced inhale and a breath hold on the inhale. So, you know, and that happens at any age. And we just hold the breath at the top. Yeah. And that's why what I see one of my passion when I fly is I just go around and I look at people, how they sleep. First, I watch how many people mouth breathe, and it's usually 80% minimum. I watch their breath rate, you know, all those geeky things. But then I really see what's the difference between their inhale and their exhale. Most people, they don't know how to exhale. They are inhaling all the time, and they never exhale fully. And I think, you know, your podcast is Take a Deep Breath. And usually Take a Deep Breath, it's like we start with an inhale. So even though it's a cycle of an inhale following an exhale, it could also be an exhale following an inhale, but we never say take an exhale before an inhale. It's always the inhale that goes first. So you kind of the hero of the show is the inhale, and you know, we just let go of the exhale. But I think here there is a lot that needs to be rewired, and a lot of breath workers should really communicate that and facilitate that to teach people how to exhale better. So one of the ways to do that is just to take a conscious exhale, take a short breath hold, exhale again, so a second exhale, and you let the inhale be a rebound. So it's no longer a forced inhale, but it's a rebound after a forced exhale. And just consciously practicing these conscious exhales releases the diaphragm, which is holding so much tension. So it's very common, and you can do that through, you know, touch. So for instance, I would restrict the airway and then just allow the inhale to be a rebound even bigger, so you can really help. You can do it yourself, you can do it to your dear ones, you can have people do it to you, but really help release the diaphragm. You know, as you know, the lungs are not the muscles. They are just, we need the muscles around, and the diaphragm being the main one to get this organ to function. So for me, whenever someone tells me something like that, I give you tips on how to treat the symptom, but I would say, let's go to the root cause again, you know? And there is a reason why you breathe like that, Mike. And this inquiry of the muscle, because the muscle has a memory, and if you can have an inquiry in those moments, things usually come out. And you know what? Sometimes it doesn't make sense because it belongs to your ancestors. It doesn't make sense because it belongs to past life. So it's an inquiry that doesn't need to be making any sense. And that's why often dreams don't make any sense, because in our dreams, we leave things that don't belong to us always. And we just say, well, that's why there is so little on the signification of dreams, because in our Western mindset, we are very much limited to what the science knows. And it's very limited what the science has established. So we need to accept that there are things that are beyond what is established by science. Dreams is just a proof of it, you know? I just told the second responder, because a lot of people don't know about it, but you know the principles of fight, flight, freeze. So when, you know, with the polyvagal theory, when you are experiencing some kind of a trauma, you want a danger, you want to run away. So let's say there is a snake in the room. If I'm running away this evening, you might not even remember there was a snake in the room. Okay, so I'm okay. Or maybe I have the right weapon and I kill the snake. So fight, fly, fight. And I'm okay, cool. I don't even remember that I killed the snake. But maybe I'm stuck in the corner and the snake is about to come and it's going to kill me. And then I completely freeze. I disassociate. I'm not in my body. That's the classic response of people experiencing trauma. So that what women would say, oh, I didn't fight and I'm ashamed because I didn't fight because the guy was stronger than me. Or it was my parents. What could I have done? So I just let it happen. You know, that's where trauma happens. Now, what is interesting is, again, that's very interesting. We are animals. So if you look at an animal going through a similar situation, when the zebra is escaping the lion, he starts to run away and he starts shaking and releasing those tensions. Yeah. So what happens is we humans, we don't do that. The technical word is we don't complete the cycle of trauma. We got stuck and then we move on, we forget. Usually we feel shame and guilt. That's the second layer of trauma that we induce on ourselves. So no one needs to know. I'm not telling anybody about it. Da, 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 da. That's our responsibility. Yeah, this is what we do to ourselves. That's no longer what happened to us. Yeah, we do it to ourselves. But instead of that, if we behave like animals and we start releasing those traumas, we complete the cycle of trauma. That's why the psoas is so important, because it's connecting the upper part of the body and the legs. So it's really literally, you want to be able to run again. So when people are breathing and releasing, I go and I press the psoas, all of a sudden the leg starts shaking. That's why also one of the principles in TRE, you build these tensions, then all of a sudden there is a huge release that happened. It's the completion of the cycle of trauma. And when we do that, we feel good. You know what? That's why we like to go dancing and get drunk on Saturday night. That's the principle of going to a club. We need to have some kind of a somatic release. In our culture, it needs to be done in a socially acceptable way. That's why I get drunk and I go to a club. That's why I will have Zumba or anybody. You know, we all have our version of some kind of a embodied release or unconscious sex. But we know we need it. But if we do it consciously with those modalities that we talk about, with conscious movement, with some kind of somatic release and massages, we really get, this is the healing. Literally healing means we get to integrate and complete those cycles of all those micro traumas we experience. For me, it's really about, yes, releasing the charge, but also having an inquiry. And have and try to understand, or at least have a conversation where, it's interesting there. I have a problem with my diaphragm. I'm breathing too much and I'm focusing on the inhale. And if I measure my inhale and my exhale, actually, my inhale is longer than my exhale. And you can ask your partner to do that while you sleep. How's your inhale? How's your exhale? And what's the rhythm of your inhale compared to your exhale? It's so interesting. We say that the breath is like an autobiography. You know, it's not about inhales and exhales and flesh and bones. It's really about loves and losses and all we've experienced. It's all imprinted in the way we breathe. And that becomes very fascinating.
Very fascinating. I love listening to you talk about breathing. It's almost poetry, oh. Alex. It's beautiful. You talked earlier about other locations of trauma. And you mentioned the jaw. Where else are people? I mean, you could probably say everywhere, but where are the main areas that we hold on to too much energy?
You know, it's crazy, but it's all common sense. So, you know, you would have seen something that you should not have seen because you were too young or it was not appropriate. So it will be in your eyes. And then you have EMDR, which is about, you know, moving fingers and getting actually traumas being released. And maybe sometimes people, they need to wear glasses very young. And is it just, in our culture, we just say, oh, it's bad luck. It's hereditary. It's just because it's the genes. I would question that. You know, what it may be, but maybe it's not the full answer. maybe you couldn't express yourself and you were not allowed to express yourself. So of course, the breath of life, maybe I don't know if you heard of the breath of life, but the breath of life is the spinal fluid that is protecting our brain. And basically that spinal fluid that is there so that we, you know, if I do this, I don't have concussion because my brain is like moving in some kind of a fluid that is there and all the time. And it's being produced all the time. It's moving and circulating in the body. So when we are touching the brain, when we are doing craniofacial and some release in different parts of the brain, all of a sudden emotions get released because a lot is there. Because the energy needs to move, and usually it moves up or it moves down, and a lot gets stuck up there. So a lot of release happens actually in the neck. You know, as you know, the accessory respiratory muscles, people have bad postures. They use, in chronic stress, they use the upper part of the body to breathe rather than their main respiratory muscles. So a lot is there. Of course, we mentioned the two usual suspects, diaphragm and psoas. And, you know, people who are like this, they are protecting their heart, you know, so it's a heartbreak. And also, we are focusing on the symptoms and telling you how to behave. But I promise you, I really have seen it with so many people. Once you access the root cause, the symptom disappears. So I can teach you how to have better posture, or I can help you release that original emotional heartbreak. And then all of a sudden, the symptom disappears over and over, whether it's knee pain, whatever it is. Basically, I say breathwork is a listening opportunity. It's not about anything else but listening to the body. And if you learn to listen to the body, now all of a sudden you can love your body. And when I say love the body, is love the manifestation of the body. I hurt my toe. Can I have some kind of appreciation for that? Maybe there is something that is happening that I should pay attention to, rather than saying, oh my God, I wish my knee was working better. I'm frustrated with my body and I don't like the way I look. And we all have this relation with our bodies. We're so disconnected. You know, if you want to know about me, ask my doctor, because I have no idea. And we are just surrendering our sovereignty to people who are supposed to know, because they know disease, they should know us. And we are completely disempowered. And I mean, we could talk about diet and all that. It's crazy. So really, through breath work, you get an opportunity to listen to your body, to finally stop going to theta brainwaves, slow down the brainwaves, and access what's really going on, create that space, you know? And when you do that, all of a sudden, interesting, this is happening. And it becomes really exciting. Those sessions are really, really exciting because it's really self-inquiry every time. And you can do this every morning. It's amazing. So you can go on, you know, the pelvic floor, about belonging. I mean, it's really every part of the body is telling a story. You know, if you go to Chinese medicine, there is a lot that about the signification of the organs and the emotions associated with it. You know, it's a rabbit hole we can enter for a few podcasts on the signification, yeah. Emotional bridge between what's happening physically and emotionally. But it's fascinating.
How did you get here? What? Because you mentioned you did sustainability. I'm guessing in France. What was your first experiences into?
I was not
work
in France. I was in Laos before, and I was in India for 6 years. So I was France a long time ago. I created Refill My Bottle, which is an app where you can refill your water bottle around the world. We could talk about water. Water is, you know, hydration and importance of water. It's like we could talk for hours on water and the importance of water in our system. You know, if you don't have a filtration system, you are the filter. I mean, it's as important as the oxygen. You know, the two main factors of health would be level of hydration, quality of hydration, and level of oxygenation. So we're really going to the essence. I was very much into water, and I was completely unconscious, and I'm still partly unconscious for sure. And my partner, mother of my two kids, wanted to separate, and I was devastated because I really didn't want to separate from my kids mainly. And she asked me to see a therapist. And for me, my family, therapists are for crazy people. And the therapist didn't get anywhere with me. Nothing was happening. So she took me to breathwork. And I didn't want to be there. Bunch of hippies grounding in the grass was not my thing at all. But I didn't have a choice because the therapist was there. And then I lay down and I started doing what everyone was doing. And next to me, someone started moaning. I assumed that she was kind of having orgasms or masturbating, but it was like not something that should happen. You know, it doesn't happen in reality. It's in a porn movie scene that doesn't happen in reality. And basically for 10 minutes, I didn't understand what was going on. No one cared. I was the only one who felt, well, what's going on here? So technically what happened is my brain froze. My brain froze for 10 minutes. I was fully present for 10 whole minutes. Very hard to achieve if you're a meditator. And I did it because I was facing a situation I could not comprehend. And what happened is after that, I took one breath to reconnect to myself. And in that breath, I had, you know, for lack of a better word, a download of what was wrong in my relationship with my kids, with my parents, with my business that was failing in one fucking breath. I cried for an hour and a half. I hadn't cried in 20 years. And I decided that moment I decided if someone like me, so unconscious, so disconnected from his feelings and emotions, has an experience like that in one breath, then really everybody can do it. Like I'm your average guy. I have zero talent. I nothing special about me at all. And if I could experience that, it was worth me dedicating my life to this. And that's it. After this, I closed the business the next day. I was already fading and had lost hundreds of thousands of dollars with this. I couldn't heal my relationship, unfortunately. So I separated. But after that, I really, because I did a business school. So for me, I need to understand things. I'm a rational guy, I like science. So I went into the rabbit hole of understanding. So I know the science of everything. And I don't know, and then I study it. And I'm like you, I think, you know, completely eager to really just learn more, 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 more. And at the same time, appreciating that I can access through my mind is very limited. The essence of what I can access is through being in theta, connecting to my heart, to my soul. And that's not something that I can achieve through my mind. It's almost the other way. Like it gets in the way. So it's a balance of heart connections, of opening up and learning.
It's beautiful. Wow, what a journey. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? When people go through that first breath experience and you've generally got nothing to compare it to, you're like, what the fuck is happening to me? You know, you've got no... I remember that first one I still remember from eight years ago is still one of the most powerful experiences, more than any drug, any alcohol, any other experience. It's pretty bad. You've got me fascinated. Can you just give me a bit more? If you don't filter your water, you are the filter. So no tap water? Tap water is no good?
You know, people are focused a lot on the water they drink. But you have a nice filtration system when you drink. But most of the water that gets in your system goes through your skin, your first organ. And people don't pay attention so much on the water they bathe in and the importance in bathing in a water that is alive, that is charged, that is activated, you know, Schauberger principles, and that is not full of chemicals, you know. So it is very important to be conscious of the water. You know, I spend a big amount of money to have a really nice filtration system. And then I charge my water with charcoal and crystals. And I put in intention in my water. So when I drink, the water is activated with thoughts and beliefs. And it's not just water anymore. It's something very nourishing. So this is where we are at the border of things that are established scientifically and things that are more controversial. But as you know, the power of intention, of visualization, but imagine now that being actually physically in a bottle. So with Refill My Bottle, I created an app where people can refill their water bottle around the world so they don't have to buy plastic bottles, because it's really detrimental to the environment, also detrimental to their health with the microplastic that you're eating every time you're drinking water. And there's tons of studies now on the risk of that. But also imagine the power of setting intentions for yourself and for others every time you connect. And that's the purpose of Refill My Bottle, to connect people through the simple act of refilling their water bottle, where you, a little bit like Airbnb, you're sending a good intention to someone at the same time as you're receiving an intention from someone. And I really do believe that as humans, we crave connection. We crave authentic heart connection. That's all we want. And we look at it in the wrong places. You know, people want relationship because of that, because they want sex because of that. Really what they're craving is heart connection. And we don't know where to look for it anymore. So we make children. We just try to create it in our thinking that it's all in our creation. But it's all around us. And when we start being fascinated by everyone, then the world becomes really fascinating. And it's amazing what being curious about someone does to that person and does to you. And that's the part that is called authentic relating in my practice, where really I want to know you. I want to understand what it is to be Mike. And if we have a conversation like that, it's probably a conversation you never had with your partner, you never had with your parents, where I'm really going to try to understand your world, what's happening inside of you. And also about us, you know, I could start a sentence like, Mike, this is what I think you think about me. So I'm no longer talking about me. You're no longer talking about you. I'm talking about how I think you perceive me, you know? And for instance, I give you, just for you to understand, in my training, I could ask a question, something like, please raise your hand if you feel that I am arrogant at times. Whoa. Or that if you find that I don't behave the same way with men and women in the group. And then some people always raise their hand. And I says, okay, tell me more. So I'm really going for the edgy thing that I really think about how I think I can be perceived by people. I'm not messing around with nice things. I go for thing that I know is there. I have some unconscious behaviors, like all of us. And I'm just pointing the finger on it because I want to learn about myself. And it's amazing when I just confront myself to people around and then tell them, all right, give it to me. Tell me how it is, how you perceive me. The answer, it creates connection. It creates, no, and sometimes it's really tough. Sometimes it's allowing anger to come out of people when they have resentment and they need to let it out. But once this is out of the way, it's always heart connection at the other side. It's amazing.
Wow. It makes me feel a bit uncomfortable, some of the things you're saying, but in a good way. It's like, oh, we need to remove some of that crap. Where if people want to, I've got one last question for you, but if people want to connect with you, where's the best place for them to go? What's the websites? What's the socials?
First of all, thank you so much for this opportunity. I've been really looking forward.
Because thank you.
You know, I really want to get the word out about these things, and you have the main podcasts in that community. So really, it means a lot to me that you made the time to give me the space to hearing me. I'm very grateful. I call it the lost art of being human, and I stole that from the lost art of breathing, or from James Nestor. So I think we need to reconnect to what it is to be human. And in the world of AI and of technology, if we reconnect to that, I think that's the best defense we can have against the direction, the wars and the disruption that are happening in the world. So yeah, again, thank you. So it's Breathing Cold Bali on Instagram, Breathing Cold Bali, my website. I have online course, 11 weeks online course on the breath. I do teacher trainings in Bali, only in person, and I do workshops. I don't travel, so don't ask me to come. I refuse travel engagements because of my carbon footprint, so people have to come to see me in Bali. I don't facilitate anywhere else. They have to come to my house. I think it's part of the process. It's in my house that everything's happening. Yes, that's it. I have some private channels where I share more content, like WhatsApp groups and Telegram groups, where I share more freely. As you know, a lot of things are being censored these days. So, yeah, that's about me. Thank you so much again for asking.
Well, no, thank you. It's been wonderful. I'd love to. I know there's a book maybe in the future, but I'd love to do a part two. But I wanted to ask you, for anybody that's listening to this now and they're about to finish this podcast and they want to connect with their deeper self or understand the shadow self or anything, what's one or two things maybe somebody could do directly after this podcast to move a bit further in the direction that you've been talking about?
Action, I would say, is louder than words. So start building a routine. And I can't stress how important it is to just have a breathing routine. And I know for myself that I've been not following my advice at times, and I could see the impact of, you know, slipping out of my own practice. So I would say really just do it, you know, just find there are tons of apps and recordings for free on the internet. You don't need to buy anything. And just press play on YouTube, on your channel and tons of other channels and apps, and just do it, you know. Just take a moment in the morning to just, before you turn on your phone, before you connect to your partner, just keep that moment sacred and be with yourself. I find that breathing is easier than meditation, but it's just a moment of just being with your own breath and have a bit of conversation with, hey, how's my breath today? So I would say practice. I would say just do it. And then throughout the day, continue with more, you know, bite-sized breathing tools that are all out there. Just do it. That's it. And then I always say, know the masculine and be in the feminine. So for me, know the masculine is read the books, you know, study, learn, be curious. And then put it on the side and stay in your creative self, your intuitive self. So dance, I would say dance every day. Because when you dance, you don't know what's going to be the next move. And often we do things which have an outcome, a goal. And it's a 10-minute breath work. It's a 2-minute ice bath and a yoga. I do this sequence. But dancing is way more intuitive. And open your mouth. Now we can go full circle. Open your mouth. And breathe through your mouth when you dance. Allow yourself to breathe through your mouth. Because you give it the space for emotions to come out. Yeah, just stay human.
Lovely. I've learned so much. Thank you. It's been beautiful. It's been a beautiful start to my morning. I can't wait to share this with people. So everybody, the links are down below so you can get straight in to find more about Alex and Breathing Cold Barley. Hopefully we'll do this again. Alex, thank you so much for your time. And
thank
everyone,
you so
thank
much,
you
mate.
For watching.
Big fan. Thank Love you, mate. Everyone. Love you. Bye-bye, man.
Beautiful.
Hey, thank you so much for sticking all the way through to the end of the podcast. It really means a lot to me because most people will have dropped off by now. So the fact that you're here at the end means the absolute world to me. And I just want to say a huge thank you for giving me your attention. And my question to you is this: what are you taking from that podcast forward? And the reason I ask that is I heard from a guy called Alex Hormozy a little while ago. Says, you know, if you're watching all these podcasts about health, wellness, business, and you don't take action, then it's just like watching a movie. And I thought, oh, bloody hell, that's me. How many things have I listened to and just forgot and moved on to the next shiny thing? And so let's just take a moment and go, what did we just learn from here? What will I do different from this podcast that I can put into action immediately that's going to help maybe improve my life? So just take a moment to think about that. And if you are looking to deepen your breathwork practice, then why not just click that link below and come and have a look at our Take a Deeper Breath community. It's really good. We've got really great people in there. I'm bringing in guests. It's a monthly commitment. You can cancel anytime. We've tried to keep the price as low as possible. We're bringing in wonderful people. I go live almost every single day to teach a breathing class, which keeps all of us accountable. And there's a load of other stuff going on as well. So the link is down below. I hope to see you in the Take a Deeper Breath community. So we have bonuses if you join us now as well. And as always, to finish off this podcast, we're going to do a breathing exercise. So get nice and comfy, and I'm going to jump us into a breathing exercise now so we can chill out, relax, and then afterwards come and join me in the community. Cheers. Welcome to Take a Deep Breath. Today's breathing exercise is a 5-minute coherence practice with guided prompts and no music, so you can really relax and listen to my voice. Coherence breathing, or resonant frequency breathing, has many benefits, which include lowering stress, resilience to anxiety, improved heart rate variability, reducing the age of your heart, and so many other beautiful benefits. And it's such a simple practice, also known as the perfect breath.
Here, we'll be breathing at around 5 breaths per minute. Just do what you can. There's no right or wrong. Just use my voice as a guide. And just bring relaxation to body and mind. Let's get started. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose. And gently out through your nose. Softly in. Softly out. slowly, gently in through the nose, and slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose, and softly out. Smoothly in through your nose, and gently out through your nose. Softly in, softly out. That's it, you're done. You're exactly where you need to be. So just be really kind with yourself now. Take a few moments to wiggle those fingers and toes as you bring yourself back into the day to day. If you've enjoyed this exercise, why not subscribe or share with a friend or a loved one? And if you're interested in taking your breath work to the next level, you can contact Mike Mayer directly and inquire about his one-on-one coaching packages. We'll see you soon. Breathe well, my friend.